The planet Earth spins into view before a vast backdrop of stars. Bronze and gold lettering appears. Universal, an MCA company.
Mr. Sandman.
Over black, words appear. Haddonfield, Illinois. October 31st,
1978.
Nighttime. The wind rustles the leaves of large oak trees. Beyond the swaying branches sits the Doyle residence. In the upstairs hall.
I want you to listen to me. I want you to go out of the house and down the street to the McKenzie's house. I want you to knock on their door. I want you to tell them to call the police and send them over here. All right? Now do as I say. Go.
The children, Tommy and Lindsay, walk downstairs in their pajamas. Teen Lori sits in a bedroom doorway. She relaxes and hugs the doorframe. Under her torn blouse, a giant gash runs the length of her left arm. Behind her, the shape sits up. He stares at Lori through his white, expressionless rubber mask. The kids run out the front door. Dr. Loomis, an older man, spots them and approaches the house. His eyes scan the upstairs windows. Eyes closed, Lori slowly rises. Behind her, the shape stands with her, towering in his dark boiler suit. As he moves closer, her lips tremble. Tears stream down her cheeks. She wobbles into the darkened hallway. The shape shuffles after her. He throttles her neck. Loomis runs up the staircase. Breaking free, Lori rips off the mask, revealing Michael Myers. Loomis cocks his gun and aims. As Michael slips the mask back on, his body jerks into the bedroom. The shape stands with his back to the balcony. Loomis fires at point-blank range, throwing the shape backwards over the balcony. His body hits the lawn. Eyes fixated on the spot where Michael stood, Loomis clicks the trigger. Lori takes her hands away from her ears and gazes up at Loomis with tear-stained eyes.
What's the boogeyman?
Gun smoke clears the room as he turns to Lori.
As a matter of fact, it was.
Downstairs, Loomis's eyes widen. Michael is gone. A large flattened patch of grass is all that remains. His shoulders slump as he edges off the front porch. Loomis kneels before Michael's indentation in the grass. He feels around. He raises his hand close to his eyes. Blood stains his fingertips. He gazes toward the moonlight, stands, and looks around. A neighboring house's front porch lights click on. A man in a robe steps out.
What's going on out here?
Call the police. Tell the sheriff I shot him.
Who?
Tell him he's still on the loose.
Is this some kind of joke? I've been trick-or-treated to death tonight.
You don't know what death is.
Loomis runs back toward the Doyle house. He looks up at the balcony, then runs out of sight. Cut to black. Orange letters appear. Mustafa Akkad presents. A Dino De Laurentiis Corporation film. Jamie Lee Curtis, Donald Pleasance in... Blood-orange words appear next to a flickering jack-o'-lantern with a crooked smile. Halloween 2. A John Carpenter, Deborah Hill production. starring Charles Cyphers. Lance Guest. Pamela Susan Shue. Hunter Von Lear. Tawny Moyer, Anna Alicia. Nancy Stevens, Gloria Gifford. We move closer and closer to the jack-o'-lantern. Leo Rossi, Ford Rainey. Edited by Mark Goldblatt, Skip Skulnick. Executive in charge of production, Nancy Platt Jacoby. Music by John Carpenter in association with Alan Howarth. The flame dims as the pumpkin splits open. Its slimy guts stretch over a human skull. Associate producer, Barry Bernardi. The skull's hollowed out, pitch black eyes stare forwards. Production designer, Michael Riva. Director of Photography, Dean Cundy. Executive Producers, Erwin Yablans, Joseph Wolf. Written by John Carpenter, Deborah Hill. Produced by Deborah Hill, John Carpenter. Directed by Rick Rosenthal. Moving through the skull's right eye hole, blackness shifts to Haddonfield from the shape's viewpoint. He creeps into a backyard nearing a shed. He stalks past the shed and down a moonlit back alley. Spotting children playing at the end of the alley, the shape turns back. A chained-up black dog barks at him. Moving under a streetlight and into another shadowy alley. As the police cruiser nears the end of the alley, the shape shifts behind a garage.
I shot him six times.
Yeah.
This guy, this man is, he's not human.
Loomis hops into the sheriff's cruiser. It rolls away. The shape ambles past the garage into a garden. Past linens hanging on a clothesline, a jack-o'-lantern sits on a kitchen windowsill. Seen through the kitchen window, an old woman in a pink robe stands over a cutting board.
Carol, you want mayonnaise on your sandwich?
She slathers mayo on bread.
How about mustard?
She steps into the living room where Harold sleeps before the TV.
Night of the living dead.
You sleep again.
On TV, a car drives through a cemetery, directed by George A. Romero. From the shape's view, he pulls away from the window and opens the kitchen screen door.
This is a WWAR special bullet.
Police in Haddonfield have just made the grisly discovery of three bodies in the upstairs bedrooms of this house. It appears that the murders took place sometime early this...
A hand reaches for the knife on the cutting board. The woman watches the TV.
Two girls and a boy. Police are searching the entire area for a mental patient who escaped last night from the Smiths Grove Warren County Sanitarium. He is now believed to be at large in Haddonfield. This is Robert Mundy, live.
Clutching the knife, the shape quietly slips out the side door. The TV returns to its programming.
Coming to get you, Barbara.
Stop it! You're ignorant.
They're coming for you, Barbara.
Eyes fixed on the TV, the woman's hand feels for the knife. She touches droplets of blood instead.
There comes one of them now.
She grimaces as she looks at her blood-stained fingers.
I'm getting out of here.
The shape saunters across the front lawn. Knife in hand, he nears another house. Flipping a light, a young woman opens the door and steps out. The shape stops, watching from the shadows.
Are you okay?
She stares for a moment before returning inside, briefly looking back over her shoulder. The shape's head turns to the lit windows. Inside, the woman holds a phone to her ear.
Hi. There was someone screaming next door. Yeah, Mr. and Mrs. Elrod. His wife's always picking on him. He probably got angry and decided to start beating her.
The shape moves out of sight.
No big deal.
Are you folks home?
Inside.
They are gone. My dad had to take my Aunt Ruby to Hardin County, and my mother decided to go along.
Didn't you hear?
Hear about what?
Some girl got killed in Haddonfield. It's on the radio.
Hold on.
She flicks on a radio.
And the police have cordoned off the entire area. To repeat, three teenagers have been found murdered in a house in the northwest section of Haddonfield. The names of the teenagers have not been released.
I can't believe it.
I know. You know, we probably knew her.
Where did it happen?
Down on Orange Grove.
The front door opens.
That's right down the street.
I know.
The shape slinks inside and out of sight.
Sally, I can hear the sirens coming.
They said the guy got away.
Do they know who it was?
No.
Oh, God.
Alice drops the phone and flips around. She stares at the open door.
Who is it?
Alice? Where are you?
Who is it?
Her head swivels left and right, peeking into the living room. She moves toward the door. The shape leaps out, thrusting the knife into her chest. Blood squirts up onto her neck. Outside the Doyle residence, two deputies step out of a cruiser. Another cruiser sits nearby. The deputies round a parked ambulance. Huddled onlookers watch from the sidewalk. On the driveway, other deputies jot down statements from witnesses.
Inside, guys, right?
Reflections of police lights flash in the windows of the house. The two deputies march up the path towards the porch. A paramedic kneels in the doorway. The paramedics stand and begin walking out a stretcher. Lori lies motionless on it. They pause to unfold the stretcher's legs before wheeling it towards the street. Lori lies under a thick wool blanket, her eyes closed and head slumped against the pillow. Reaching the sidewalk, the paramedics turn the stretcher head first, collapse the wheels, and carry her inside the ambulance. The younger paramedic, Jimmy, hops in with her.
Lori, can you hear me?
I want to go to sleep.
It's all right, take it easy. We're going to go to the clinic, all right?
Don't let him go to sleep.
It's okay.
The older paramedic, Bud, jumps in the driver's seat. They speed off down the tree-lined street.
Hey, you know this chick?
Yeah, her name's Lori Strode. She goes to school with my little brother, Ziggy.
Her old man, Strode Realty?
Yeah.
Okay.
Outside Haddonfield Memorial Hospital, a neon sign emergency sits above a canopy and parked ambulance. A car pulls up. A mother steps out and runs around to the driver's side door. Her son, dressed as a pirate, presses a towel to his busted, bleeding lip.
Okay, just get out easy. It's gonna be okay. Just walk real slow, okay? You all right? You all right, hon? Oh, God. Oh. Here, just put it up there real gently. You okay? Let's go. Just walk real slow. Come on.
They hurry off. The ambulance pulls into the hospital's empty parking lot. The mother and son step inside as Bud pulls up. He walks round to the back and opens the doors. He and Jimmy carry Lori out. As they wheel her inside, Lori stares off to the side with a blank, unflinching expression. From Lori's viewpoint, the automatic door opens. Fluorescent bulbs shine over the sterile white tiling of a narrow hall. At a nurse's station, the mother stands beside her son.
Fill out this form. Someone will be with you in a moment.
Oh, but we should see a doctor right away.
He's with a patient. Would you please wait in room A?
Oh, come on, hon. Thank you.
They leave. Bud approaches, handing the nurse paperwork.
Here's Dr. Mason.
He's been at the country club. I think he's drunk.
Oh, great.
What have you got?
Stab wound, left anterior chest, possibly penetrating. Multiple
Lori's
contusions.
Throat.
Yeah, come on,
fracture,
let's go.
Right ankle.
Janet, get me some more coffee.
Get that out of here.
Dr. Mixter stumbles to Lori's bedside.
Oh, Lori. Hi there. Well, let's see what we have here. Oh, yes. You lost a lot of blood. We'll need to tape it. Yes.
Mixter pokes a needle into her arm.
When was the last time you had a tetanus shot?
I don't know.
Blood dribbles as he withdraws the syringe.
Yeah. Get me some 3-0 nylon on it.
Cutting needle?
Yes.
Right away.
We're going to have to put her out.
No. No, don't put me to sleep.
Okay, relax. Relax, I'm not going to hurt you.
No. No.
The paramedics watch nearby.
Please don't put me to sleep.
Take it easy.
He jabs her arm again. Lori winces.
Try to relax, Lori. Dr. Mixter will have you stitched up in no time.
Take it easy, Lori.
In Sheriff Brackett's cruiser.
Circle the block.
Brackett aims a flashlight outside.
How long now? It's about 30 minutes. Put a light down there. There, by those trees.
Well, there's nothing.
Well, keep going.
You know, Doctor, I'm just about there.
What?
The point where I stop taking orders from you.
All right, Sheriff. Whatever you want. The primary concern is that we stop him.
You let him out.
I didn't.
His own goddamn doctor.
I didn't let him out.
Loomis reloads his revolver.
Chief Brackett, come in, please.
Who is it?
Chief, this is Ramsey.
Say again, what is it?
This is Ramsey.
Where are you?
I'm out by the bakery, moving north on the Scottsville Road.
Get the hell back into town. Go up 17th Street, meet me by the bypass.
10-4, Ramsey, please.
Will you put that thing away?
Loomis lowers the gun, shifting nervously.
Couldn't have shot him 6 times.
You think I'm lying, Sheriff?
I think you missed him. No man could take 6 slugs.
I've told you this isn't a man. Look out, slow down.
What?
Over there, look.
A masked figure with disheveled hair staggers up a sidewalk.
Is that him? I don't know.
Brandishing his gun, Loomis runs out.
Get back! Run! Go on, run! Loomis! Get back, you kid! Run,
Loomis!
Stop! Get out of here!
Brackett chases Loomis past trick-or-treaters. The figure crosses the street. Brackett catches up to Loomis and wrestles for the gun.
Stop!
Another police cruiser plows head-on into the masked figure, ramming him against a parked van. A deputy rolls out as flames engulf the cars. Fire licks the figure's charred face.
He came out of nowhere. I couldn't stop.
Is it him?
Loomis gazes through the flames at the burning skull, then shakes his head.
Is it him or not?
Loomis rubs his eyes. Another cruiser skids to a halt. A deputy runs out approaching Brackett.
Lee. They found 3 bodies.
Where?
Across the street from the Doyle house. 3 kids. One of them was Annie.
Brackett grabs the deputy, then runs to his cruiser. Loomis and the deputy follow. Outside the hospital, the mother and son walk.
Does it hurt a lot?
A little bit.
What?
A little bit.
Oh, sweetie, I can't understand you. Look, it'll be okay. We'll play some games tonight and...
Repeating for those of you who just tuned in, three people are dead tonight.
In a security room, Bud and the blonde nurse watch the news.
I understand we're going to stay on the air now. Repeating for those of you who just tuned in, three people are dead.
A nurse, Mrs. Alves, rounds a hallway's corner.
Any further details?
Jimmy strides along another empty hall.
This is Robert Mundy, reporting to you live.
He peeks inside Lori's room. He enters, gently closing the door behind him. He looks down at Lori lying unconscious in her bed. She wears a hospital gown and has a bandage around her hand. Jimmy touches her hand. Her eyes open and search the room. She looks up at Jimmy. He smirks.
Hi.
Mrs. Alves barges in.
Jimmy, leave her alone. Lori, how are you feeling?
Sore.
Alves examines Lori's bandaged ankle.
What happened?
Cracked a bone. You're lucky it wasn't a break. Dr. Mixter felt that he should wait until tomorrow before he might cast on. You have to get some rest. Come on, Jimmy.
Jimmy waits for Mrs. Alves to leave, then shuts the door behind her. He smiles at Lori.
I could just have to drink or anything.
She nods.
How about a Coke?
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Come on, Jimmy, we've got to roll another Coke in there.
Okay.
Come on.
Get that Coke later.
Out.
Outside the Wallace house.
Moments ago, police reported that Michael Myers, formerly of Haddonfield, who fled the Smiths' Grove Warren County Sanitarium last night, was believed to have burned to death. Meanwhile, three bodies were discovered in the upstairs bedroom of the house directly behind me. Identification of the victims is being withheld, pending notification.
Forget that. I want to concentrate on the house. Talk to some kids, see if anybody saw anything. You need the parents' permission to use a statement. If you can't find the parents, get a statement anyway.
The reporter eyes the sheriff.
Not now.
Brackett, Loomis, and the deputy, Gary Hunt, march toward a stretcher. Brackett slowly lifts the body cover. Annie's lifeless eyes stare up at him. Her bloody neck has been strangled raw. Sheriff Brackett tenderly closes his daughter's eyes. He pulls the cover over her head. Bud and Jimmy wheel her off.
I have to go and tell my wife before somebody else does.
He stares open-mouthed at Deputy Hunt.
Go on home, Lee. Go on home. I'll take care of everything.
Damn you.
Sorry.
What have you done?
I haven't done anything.
You let him out!
I didn't let him out. I gave orders for him to be restrained.
Now, is there anything else that we can do for you?
If that wasn't Michael Myers burning up in that car, then a lot of other kids are going to be slaughtered tonight.
He's dead. I saw him.
I saw a man in a mask.
It was him.
I want to believe you, but I got to be sure. I can't stop until I'm certain that he's dead.
You're talking about him like he's some kind of animal.
He was my...
Would you keep him back?
He was my patient for 15 years. It became an obsession with me until I realized that there was nothing within him, neither conscience nor reason, that wasn't even remotely human. An hour ago, I stood up and fired six shots into him. He just got up and walked away. I am talking about the real possibility that he is still out there.
The reporter lingers nearby.
Where'd they take the body?
Coroner's office.
Get a dentist to meet me there in half an hour.
Bud's ambulance passes a shopping strip. Teenagers in costume wander by. A kid wearing a cowboy hat and holding a radio on his shoulder strolls through the parking lot.
Reverend Lori Strode claims to have shot him six times at close range. Haddonfield police have no explanation for the suspect's disappearance, but say they're confident he will be captured soon.
I cannot believe it. Pin the tail on the donkey and bobbing for apples. Actually bobbing in water, no less.
Oh, you gotta use water, so you can use
one of them. Never going to another Halloween party as long as I live, especially not at Stevie Mathis' house. And of course, now I'm gonna be late.
Oh, you gotta drive me home first.
Oh, Darcy, I don't have time.
Well, you got to.
Oh, can't you ask Eddie Lee?
He's in Russellville.
Oh, it's 5 minutes to your house, another 5 minutes back to the hospital. Mrs. Alves is going to kill me.
You promised me.
I know I did.
Darcy and the other young woman, Karen, hop in a car. Karen and Darcy drive out of the lot.
There is one survivor. 17-year-old Lori Strode was found directly across the street from the home where the murders took place. The teenager was taken across town to Haddonfield Memorial Clinic.
The kid with the radio bumps into the shape. The kid runs off. The shape presses forward. The shape passes teenagers and storefronts. He approaches a sign on the street corner. The sign reads Haddonfield Memorial Hospital. An arrow points up the street. He marches in the arrow's direction. At the hospital, Karen's car parks in a visitor's spot. Stepping out of the car, she grabs her purse and her dry-cleaned nurse's scrubs. She checks her wristwatch. She makes her way inside. In her car's mirror, the shape can be seen. A break room.
In the aftermath of the killings, the streets between Chestnut and 10th are jammed with people and cars. These streets are Chestnut and 10th, they're just jammed with both people and
cars. Well, I sure could go for a pizza now.
This is a quiet, peaceful street.
Nice big one with sausage, onions, peppers. But no mushrooms. I hate mushrooms.
Bud smokes a joint, holding it with a pair of forceps. He sits at a table alongside a nurse.
It looks like a goddamn homecoming.
Outside, peering at a section of the clinic's brick building, a corner room's light glows. In the security office, the portly guard Garrett swivels in his chair. A horror film plays on a monitor. The feed on another monitor flickers. An outside camera shows the shape walking by the lit corner room. Garrett's eyes are glued to a magazine as the shape crosses the screen. Garrett peers over the monitors. Karen smiles at him outside the entrance. Garrett pushes a button. She enters. The automatic emergency door leading into the sterile hall slowly shuts. In the break room...
Julie saw him, you know.
Who?
Michael Myers.
Come on.
I swear, yesterday when she was coming to work.
Where did she see him?
You know the shopping bag out by the mall? Well, she stopped at a light and saw him walking in that field behind the Lost River Drive-In.
Jimmy stands nearby listening.
Julie said he was so creepy.
Julie's full of shit. He didn't escape until last night.
She shoots him a look.
You don't have to swear, Bud.
Well, she's a goddamn moron anyway.
Every other word you say is either hell or shit or damn.
Sorry. I guess I just fuck up all the time.
He smirks. Gritting her teeth, the nurse pushes off from the table. She scowls at Bud before rolling her eyes and making for the door. Karen walks in, smiling at Bud.
Hi.
You're late.
Yeah, I know. I've got to get on the ward. Hi, Jimmy.
Oh, hi, Karen.
Bud reaches out his hand. Karen playfully touches his fingertips.
See you later.
Right.
She leaves.
Amazing grace, come sit on my face. Don't make me cry. I need your pie.
Look, why don't you just shut up, all right?
What are you all revved up about?
Look, it could have been Ziggy, you know? And it could have been your brother Mark we pulled out of there.
All right, so what do you want me to do? Look, Jimmy, rule number one, never get involved with a patient. Nurses, that's another story. But patients, it's no good. It never works out.
Jimmy storms off.
Where you going, college boy? I'm telling you, listen to old bud.
Jimmy strides down a corridor. He passes a half-open door. Behind it is pitch black. It slowly shuts. From the shape's viewpoint, he moves slowly down a darkened stairwell bathed in moonlight. He moves down a deserted hospital corridor, passing a wheelchair and Halloween decorations on the wall. Karen rounds the corner at the end of the hall. The shape dips into an adjacent room. Wearing a white nurse's cap, Karen ties a purple belt around her waist. Passing the room, Karen peers inside the NICU. She hurries past a nurse's station and into another room. The shape's gaze lands on the newborn infants. He edges back out towards the hallway, but Mrs. Alves passes by. Karen exits the other room and adjusts her cap. Mrs. Alves shakes her head.
You were late again tonight.
The shape appears in the window behind them.
Just 15 minutes? That could be the difference between life and death for one of those kids.
You're right. I'm sorry, Mrs. Alves.
I wouldn't hear any excuses. You're a good nurse, Karen. I'd hate to lose you, but you've got to learn to be on time. Go over this list.
You'll be fine.
The shape slips out of the room and down the hall.
Carr, Mrs. Carr, 9:30 tomorrow morning.
God, they should have handled it more carefully.
In Lori's room, Jimmy sits at her bedside.
Michael Myers.
Slits of moonlight pierce through the blinds.
Michael Myers?
Yeah, he was the guy that was after you.
She furrows her brows and looks around.
In the Myers house? Little kid who killed his sister?
Yeah.
But he's in a hospital somewhere.
He escaped last night.
How do you know?
It's all over the radio. Television, too. It's on right now.
Lori sinks into her pillow, open-mouthed.
Why me? Why me?
Mrs. Alves opens the door.
Time's up, Jimmy. Let's go.
Okay.
Jimmy walks behind Mrs. Alves and mouths, I'll be back. Her head spins.
No, you won't. Visiting hours are definitely over.
He leaves.
Men, you can't live with them. You can't live without them. How's that shoulder feel?
Better.
Good. We've been trying to get a hold of your parents. Dr. Mixter told me they were at the same party he was, but they're not there now, and they're not at home. Do you have any idea where else they might be?
No.
I'll just keep trying.
Mrs. Alves dials the phone. The shape walks through double doors into a supply room.
This is just... Janet?
Yes, Mrs. Alves?
Go tell Mr. Garrett we're having trouble with the phones right now.
But it's at the other end of the hall.
Janet.
Yes, Mrs. Alves?
Lori stirs, her brows furrowed.
What's wrong with the phones?
Nothing for you to worry about. Just get some rest right now. I'll let you know as soon as we get a hold of your parents.
Mrs. Alves looks back as she leaves, closing the door behind her. Lori stares at the door window. She glances at the phone and sits up. She holds the handset to her ear, then pulls it away. She stares at it quizzically. Branches scratch Lori's window. In the hall outside Garrett's office.
I'm gonna go check a pool.
You wait here and I'll call you.
I have to get back on the floor.
It'll take me 5 minutes.
But I don't even know how to use this thing.
Garrett leaves. Nurse Janet slumps her shoulders and flips the walkie-talkie in her hands. Behind the building, near a loading dock, Garrett shines his flashlight across power lines and telephone poles. Garrett turns toward a dumpster, pointing his flashlight. He creeps toward steel trash cans, his light shifting between them and the dumpster. The light settles on the dumpster's lid as he gets near. Lifting the lid, he finds a blood-stained piece of cardboard among the discarded newspapers and trash. He reaches for it. A cat pounces on his neck. He falls back, knocking over the trash cans. He sits up with his flashlight ready. He climbs to his feet and adjusts his jacket. He points the flashlight at doors alongside the back of the building. Scanning around, he spots something. He pauses and slowly steps away from the dumpster. He nears an ajar door with an opened padlock. He peers inside. He pushes the sliding door and steps into the storeroom. He squeezes between boxes, fluorescent bulbs, shelving with bric-a-brac, and a stepladder. He flicks on a lamp on a nearby desk. He straightens and points the flashlight toward the noise. Garrett's light darts across a wall fixed with various hand tools. He walks further into the storeroom and whips out his radio.
I think somebody broke into the storeroom.
Janet frowns with knitted brows at her walkie-talkie.
Mr. Garrett? I can't hear you.
One of you had better drive down to the sheriff's station right away.
Janet twists a knob on her walkie-talkie.
Mr. Garrett, how do you work this thing?
Janet!
He whips toward the clanking. He steps toward a row of bolted doors. At the first door, his light shines on the busted padlock. As he nears, he pushes the door shut. He slips the lock off the metal security plate. Karen shakes her walkie-talkie.
Mr. Garrett!
Garrett pulls the metal plate off the hook and throws open the door. Boxes tumble out. Garrett stares into a shadowy storage room stacked with files. He turns toward the clanging. He walks to the second door. He flicks off the door's busted padlock. Grabbing the metal plate, he gently pulls the door open. Tightening his lips and relaxing his shoulders, he peers inside the second storage room. He casually flips the flashlight into his other hand, then closes the door. The shape steps out from behind the door, slamming a hammer into Garrett's forehead.
Mr. Garrett, I gotta get back on the floor. Hello?
Janet shakes her head and walks off. At the morgue, the coroner, Graham, scrapes the teeth of the masked figure's charred corpse. He shakes his head. Hunt and Loomis grimace at the unrecognizable remains.
It's difficult. Even the gums are charred, but look here. See here? No fillings. He's young, maybe 17, maybe 18.
Michael Myers is 21.
Positive ID means we check x-rays and dental records.
It'll take hours.
No other way to know for sure. I'm sorry.
We haven't got hours. Listen to me. We've got to assume that Michael Myers is still alive.
Another deputy enters.
Everybody goes back out.
But we just close it up.
I want a sweep from Chestnut south to the bypass. I want every street, every house, every backyard.
Okay. You've got it.
The deputy leaves. Hunt looks to Loomis.
Thank you.
Hunt nods with a stiff smile. A rock crashes through a window. A mob gathers outside the Myers house. Above the porch stands a deputy.
All right, that's enough. That's enough. Now, come on, get out of here. You guys go home. You guys get out of here. Come on.
Hunt's cruiser pulls up.
This is Hunt. Send another vehicle. The old Myers house, 45 Lampton Lane.
The tribe. One of their number was butchered. This is the wake.
Hunt's brows crease at the sight of Loomis's revolver.
Heightens my sense of security.
They step out. They approach the house. Carrying a shotgun, Hunt pushes past a teenager.
All right, knock it off!
A deputy steps out the front door.
Empty. Plus, we've covered the whole east end of town. There's nothing. Check it again. He just isn't there.
Check it again.
Hunt pulls out a pack of smokes.
You know, Haddonfield is a pretty quiet town before tonight. The only gunshots you ever heard.
He offers Loomis one.
Start the track meet at the local high school.
Yet one night in 1963, Michael Myers did murder his sister in that upstairs bedroom with a large butcher knife.
I remember.
On Halloween.
I was 16 years old.
It's his anniversary, Mr. Hunt.
Hunt hands Loomis a lighter.
He came back.
After 15 years?
He waited with extraordinary patience. There was a force inside him biding its time. The staff grew accustomed to his immobility and silence. In many ways, he was the ideal patient. He didn't talk, he didn't cry, he didn't even move. He just waited. The staff was unprepared. They didn't know what he was.
Did you know?
Yeah, I knew.
Mr. Hunt?
Yeah, what is it, Craig?
Yeah, I'm worried about Bennett Tramer.
He isn't home yet.
Yeah, and he left the party at 10.
It's only a little after 11, boys.
He was real drunk.
How old is he?
17.
He had this stupid mask on.
All right, boys.
17. I'm wearing a mask.
Oh, God.
Maybe we should check his dental record.
Loomis throws down his cigarette.
Whole Reservoir Road. They had a break into the elementary school. They're pretty sure it's him.
Come on.
At the hospital, Karen stands before a pill station and stares off, blinking. A patient's door alarm goes off. Karen relaxes, drops pills into bottles, grabs her stethoscope, and heads toward the room. Strolling down the hall, she passes the NICU. She gently presses into the patient's door and enters. Moonlight cascades through the blinds and over the bed. Karen marches forward. Bud wraps his arm around her neck and pulls her into bed.
Oh, you idiot!
You could have broken it.
His finger.
I wish I had. I also could have used these on you.
A pair of medical scissors.
What an asshole.
Happy Halloween.
Bud, you are the biggest jerk I've ever met. Oh.
But you love me.
Yeah. I'm an idiot.
She kneels on the foot of the bed.
Let's go down to the therapy room. Bud's finger needs a little bit of therapy.
I can't leave the kids right now.
But everybody's all worded out tonight. All this Michael Myers crap. Look, I just want...
He gingerly presses his hand behind her neck and pulls her in close. They kiss. Karen slowly pulls away.
Therapy room's 3 doors down.
I suppose if we left the door open, we could hear somebody was coming or one of the kids starting to cry. No, I've got to check it out first.
15 minutes.
She hops off the bed.
If everything's okay.
You're wasting time.
Various hospital hallways lie dark and empty. Lori sleeps.
Why won't you tell me? Why won't you ever tell me anything?
A dream.
I told
two children.
I'm not your mother.
Blood drips on black tile. In a sanitarium, a young boy gazes out a bright window. A young girl approaches. More blood drips. The girl clutches a doll. The boy turns in his chair. The pool of blood swells. Lori wakes. Eyes groggy, she looks around the room. Her heavy eyelids close as her head slumps on the pillow. In the therapy room, Karen undresses behind a translucent frosted wall of glass. Bud, naked in the heated hydrotherapy tub, watches Karen's shapely figure undress. She unhooks her bra, then wraps a towel above her chest. Bud turns away from the frosted glass. Karen walks to the glass door. She stands there for a moment, then flips off the room's light switch. She opens the door and saunters in. Bud moves over. She drops the towel and climbs in. Bud stares at her perky breasts.
Ow.
She slips into his arms. They begin making out. Bud caresses her face and squeezes her shoulders. The view shifts to the temperature control room just outside. Steam fills the room as Bud's hands move below the water. She slightly pulls away.
It's hot in here.
It's just me.
The shape's hand turns a valve. A red sign reads, hydrotherapy pool water temperature not to exceed 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Bud kisses Karen. She pulls back again.
I'm not kidding. It's too hot in here now, Bud. Why don't you go check?
It's cold out there.
It can get cold in here.
She stares at him, grinning.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Wrapping a towel around his waist, he ambles into the control room. He wipes condensation off the temperature gauges. Karen grabs her towel. She wraps it around her body and sits on the edge of the tub. From behind the closed door, the shape wraps a cord around Bud's neck and strangles him. Karen pats herself dry. Bud's arms flail behind the frosted glass. The shape drops Bud to the floor. Karen pulls a pin out of her bun and fixes her hair. The shape steps to the door. He slowly enters. Standing directly behind her, the shape places a hand on Karen's shoulder.
Forget it, bud. I have to go back to work.
After fixing her hair, she lays her hand on his.
You want to go for breakfast later?
She pulls his hand to her mouth and nibbles on his thumb.
I'm sorry. Just have to get back, that's all.
He yanks his hand away. She turns.
Now, bud, don't be that way.
He grabs her head and dunks it in the water. The temperature gauge exceeds 120 degrees. With every dunk into the water, Karen's flesh melts and peels away from the bone. The shape pulls her limp body out of the tub. She hits the floor. Her face, hands, and arms are spotted with grotesque blisters. At the schoolhouse,
he got in here.
A broken window.
Look over here.
Loomis and Hunt follow the deputy to a desk stained with blood.
And here?
On the teacher's desk, the knife from Mrs. Elrod's protrudes from a kid's crayon drawing of a family holding hands.
Sister.
The knife goes through the sister's chest.
Is that it?
No. Here.
They walk to the chalkboard. A car pulls up outside.
What's this?
It's gibberish.
No. It's a Celtic word. Samhain.
Drawn in blood.
It means the Lord of the Dead. The end of summer. The festival of Samhain. October 31st.
A woman enters.
Dr. Loomis?
Yes.
I have to talk to you.
Loomis blinks at Nurse Marion.
Oh, I didn't recognize you.
He offers a weak smile.
What are you doing here?
Privately.
Loomis follows Marion into the hall. He lights her cigarette with Hunt's lighter. A janitor operates a floor scrubber at the other end of the hall.
Thanks. Dr. Loomis, you've been ordered back to Smith's Grove.
Ordered? He can't order me.
No, no. But the governor can. He spoke to Dr. Rogers personally a few hours ago.
The governor? Well, well.
Dr. Loomis, this thing is all over the state. The patient escapes once, murders three teenagers. You shoot him with a gun, he escapes again.
Someone should have listened to me earlier.
I know, I'm sorry. Dr. Rogers is just afraid this could jeopardize our whole rehabilitation program. He doesn't want anyone from the mental health department anywhere near Haddonfield.
Why'd he send you down here, then?
In case you'd already found him. Alive.
Tell Dr. Rogers. Tell him you couldn't find me. Tell him anything. I can't leave Haddonfield now.
I'm afraid you don't have a choice. There's a marshal waiting for you outside.
Loomis stares after her. In the hospital security room, the shape lurks on a monitor. He moves past patient rooms. Jimmy walks into Lori's room.
Lori. Listen, I know that you don't know me very well, but I just want to let you know that I'm not going to let anything happen to you. Okay? Promise.
Lori stares up at the ceiling, unblinking. He waves his hand over her eyes. She doesn't flinch. He grabs her wrist. He hurries back into the room with a blonde-haired nurse, Jill. Jill rests her hand on Lori's forehead and flashes a pen light across her eyes. Janet runs down the hallway. In Mixter's quarters, the shower door is open. Steam washes into the room.
Dr. Mixter!
Janet walks into the bathroom. She stops, then turns toward a closed office door.
Dr. Mixter?
She pokes her head inside.
Dr. Mixter, it's an emergency.
He sits at his desk with his back to Janet, facing a small aquarium. She inches forward through the darkness.
Dr. Mixter, it's Lori Strode. She's had a reaction to the medication. You better come quick.
Half of Mixter's face is shrouded in shadow. His blank eyes stare into the aquarium.
Dr. Mixter.
She touches his shoulder and spins him around in the chair. A giant syringe sticks out of his right eyeball. Janet breathes heavily and slowly backs away. As she steps deeper into the shadows, the shape's face appears behind her. Cupping her mouth, he draws back on the plunger of another syringe. He sticks her eye with the needle. He releases his grip. She slumps to the floor. Looking down, the shape cocks his head. Light from the aquarium dances off his pale mask. In Lori's room...
This is ridiculous. I'm gonna go find Mrs. House.
Jimmy sprints down a hall. He stops at a door labeled Ladies Lounge.
Mrs. House?
A locker door stands open. Jimmy runs off. In Lori's room... Nurse Jill turns toward the creaking, stepping out of the room. She crosses her arms and looks around. A jack-o'-lantern flickers on the nurse's station. A patient's room alarm buzzes. She closes Lori's door. From the shape's viewpoint, lurking in the shadows, he watches Jill enter another patient's room. He turns to Lori's door and inches closer, passing the nurse's station. He peers through the door's window pane. The shape enters. He clutches a scalpel. He raises the scalpel over the bed. He jabs down repeatedly into the bed. He yanks off the covers. Pillows lie where Lori slept. Lori limps down a hall, propping herself against the wall. The shape turns away from the bed and leaves. Lori slowly makes her way down the hall, clutching her leg. Jill exits the patient's room. She enters Lori's room and sees the empty bed.
Lori, you okay?
She checks the window, then runs out. On the security monitors, Lori wanders the halls. At the end of a dark corridor, the shape pushes through double doors. From Lori's hazy and distorted viewpoint, she slips into an empty patient room and reaches for a bedside telephone. She falls to her knees. The shape lurks at the end of a hall, gradually moving closer. Sitting on the floor, Lori clutches the telephone in her lap and scoots herself to the wall. The shape continues to stalk the hall, now much closer. Lori whips her head to the clanging sound. She rests the handset on the receiver. Hugging the wall, she peeks out of the doorway. Looking from side to side, she sees that both ends of the hallway are empty. She closes the door. Back to the wall, she hugs her knees. She gently rocks herself to sleep. Loomis walks with Marion and Hunt outside the school.
We'll find him.
Where are you gonna look?
I don't know.
Neither do I.
A marshal escorts Loomis to a car. Marion follows. Watching them leave, Hunt drops his head.
Mr. Garrett?
Jill leans on the security office counter. She reaches over and grabs Garrett's hat. Dropping it, she backs away and looks around. The shape creeps down a hall on the monitor behind the counter.
Mr. Garrett!
He opens a door and slips inside. Jill leans over the counter and frowns. She turns toward the sound of the closing door. Jill appears on the monitor in the same hall where the shape stood. She walks past the room the shape entered. She swings her head to the door.
Mr. Garrett? Mr. Garrett?
Jimmy taps her back.
Sorry. Listen, I can't find anybody. Bud's gone. Mrs. Alves is gone. We gotta find Lori. All right, listen,
The shape's shadow lingers.
Why don't you check the east wing again? All right? And then if you don't find anyone, I want you to get into your car and drive out to the sheriff's station and get someone out of here. All right?
Jill nods slightly.
Okay, I'll keep looking.
She watches him leave. The shape's silhouette stands motionless behind a curtain. Jill presses down the hall in the opposite direction. Lori sleeps, resting her head on her knee. Jimmy charges through an exit-only door.
Hello?
He scans the room. His eyes dart back and forth, and his mouth hangs open. He steps to two doors. One reads Major Surgery, the other Minor Surgery. Jimmy enters the Minor Surgery room. Mrs. Alves lies strapped to a table, her arm hanging limp.
Jesus.
A surgical lamp casts a spotlight over her in the otherwise dark room. Jimmy checks the pulse on her neck. He bends down and feels an IV on her arm. The other end of the tubing hangs over a pool of blood on the black floor. Jimmy stands, mouth agape. He quickly turns to leave. Slipping onto his back, he lies unconscious next to Mrs. Alves with blood splattered across his cheek. Outside, Jill wraps a jacket around her nurse's uniform as she strides into the parking lot. She briskly walks to a parked car. She frowns and leans over the wheel. Stepping out, she notices the back tire is flat. Examining closer, she sees the front tire is the same. She hurries back toward the hospital entrance. On her way, she spots more flat tires on other parked cars. She runs for the entrance. Inside, Lori slowly cracks open the door into the hall. She crawls into the threshold and peeks her head around the corner. She turns to check the other direction. She places her hands flat on the floor. Arching her back, she scoots her knees forward. Grabbing the wall, she pushes off the floor and stands. She hunches over as she hobbles down the hall. Jill rounds a corner.
Lori!
Lori slowly turns to Jill. Lori continues on.
Wait, Lori!
The shape pops out from behind Jill. Lori turns. He stabs Jill's back with a scalpel, hefting her entire body into the air. Lori's eyes widen. Jill's shoes slip off. She drops to the floor. Lori limps away. The shape stalks after her. Lori's pace quickens. She looks over her shoulder. The shape nears. She pushes gurneys into the hall, blocking the path. She stumbles down a stairwell, her hand sliding along the support rail. She bursts through a door into a lower floor hall. She yanks on a locked door, then another. Lori sneaks into a room. The shape steadily marches downstairs. Lori lurches through a basement boiler room. D dim emergency lighting shines along a narrow pathway. She backs into a figure hanging from the ceiling, their hands swinging. With a bloated face and bulging eyes, Garrett hangs from a light. The long shadows of the shape's legs plod into the boiler room. Lori turns. He nears. Lori reaches for a tube of plumbing and hoists herself to a small window. She slides the window open. Her front half hangs through the access window into an adjacent room. The shape swipes the scalpel at her dangling legs and feet. Lori drops out of the window and onto a pile of boxes. Crawling among shards of glass, she staggers to her feet. She rounds a fenced-in storage unit. Her hands grip the fencing as she pulls herself to the other side of the room. She darts to an elevator illuminated by a red overhead lamp. The elevator indicator reads BG12, level 2 glows. Lori repeatedly presses the up button. The shape steps over the broken glass. Light glints off the scalpel blade. He rounds the fencing. The indicator glows level 1. Level G. Level B. She hurries into the elevator. She hugs the opposite wall of the elevator as he closes in. The door shuts on the blade. He pulls his hand out. The opposite door is open. Lori hobbles into the hospital lobby. She trips out into the parking lot. Stopping between Jimmy and Karen's cars, she turns toward the entrance. She tries Jimmy's back door. It's locked. She hops into the passenger seat and sinks into the footwell. Her hands feel the dashboard. She slowly peeks through the front windshield. She stares at the entrance. She dips back below the dashboard. The marshal's car. It turns past the shopping center, past the Haddonfield Hospital sign. Loomis and Marion sit in the back seat.
You didn't believe me, nobody did.
I'm sorry.
Don't feel sorry for me. Feel sorry for that little town back there. The years before they forget this.
Dr. Loomis, I think there's something else you should know.
You see the blackboard back there in the elementary school?
Yeah.
In order to appease the gods, the druid priests held fire rituals. Prisoners of war, criminals, the insane, animals were burned alive in baskets. By observing the way they died, the druids believed they could see omens of the future.
The marshal glances in the rear view.
2,000 years later, we've come no further. Samhain isn't evil spirits. It isn't goblins, ghosts, or witches. It's the unconscious mind. We're all afraid of the dark inside ourselves.
Dr. Loomis, please, listen to me. There's a file on Michael Myers that nobody knew about.
I've seen everything.
No, it was hidden, sealed by the court after his parents were killed. Now, after the governor heard what happened tonight, he authorized Dr. Rogers to open it.
What file?
It isn't fair. They should have allowed you to examine everything. That girl, that Strode girl,
That's Michael Myers' sister. She was born 2 years before he was committed. 2 years after his parents died and she was adopted by the Strodes, they requested that the records be sealed in order to protect the family.
Jesus, don't you see what he's doing here in Haddonfield? He killed one sister 15 years ago, now he's trying to kill the other. Tonight, after I shot him, where did they take her?
The clinic.
Clinic? Where? Do you know this area well?
A little bit.
Where's the hospital located?
Dr. Loomis, we're under orders from the governor.
It's back on Route 17, about 3 miles.
Turn this car around now.
I can't do that. I've got orders.
Those orders just change.
Dr. Loomis.
Doctor, you're getting yourself into a lot of trouble.
What is it you fellas usually do? Fire a warning shot, right?
He fires out the window. The car flips a U-turn and speeds back towards Haddonfield. At the hospital, Lori crouches in the corner of Jimmy's car, her heavy eyes close and open. The shadow of a man crosses her face. He steps to the driver's door. Jimmy sits.
Jimmy!
Mouth agape, he slowly turns to her. Groggy, he blinks.
It's all right. We're gonna get out of here.
Leaning close to the wheel, he stares up. He passes out on the wheel. Lori yanks Jimmy off the horn. His head rolls back. She scoots into his lap and tries the key. Her eyes flit to the entrance, then to Jimmy. She scoots back. Opening the passenger door, she falls to the pavement. Her fingernails scratch the ground. Headlights shine across her face. She crawls forward.
I ought to handcuff you to the wheel, but I have a feeling I'm going to need you in there. Can I trust you?
What have I got to lose? Except my job.
Lori crawls towards their car.
Help. Help.
Loomis follows the others inside.
Help me!
She lowers her head. In the lobby.
Go and check all the rooms down there. Go on.
Dr. Loomis.
You stay with me and shut up.
The marshal heads off. Loomis ushers Marion down a hall. Outside, Lori inches forward. She struggles to her feet. She staggers to the entrance. The shape emerges, basked in red light. He pursues her. She bangs on the glass door. The shape closes the distance, passing a parked ambulance.
Help! 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 Help!
The marshal turns and runs.
Help! 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 Help!
Loomis runs to the locked door. Lori backsteps toward Marion. The shape nears the door. Loomis backs away while aiming the revolver. Marion holds Lori. Unscathed, the shape steps straight through the glass. The shape twitches with every shot. He falls to his knees. The marshal catches up to them. The shape collapses onto his back. The marshal stands over him.
Stop! He's dead. No, he's not. Look at him. He's still breathing. Okay. There's a two-way radio in the marshal's car. I want you to go outside. Get on that radio and get Hunt.
Now, wait a minute. I'm the only one authorized to use that. Move!
Marion runs through the shattered glass door.
I'm sorry I left you. Are you all right?
The marshal kneels beside the shape's splayed body. The marshal leans over him, feeling his body.
Get away from him!
But he stopped breathing! No!
The shape sits up. He slashes the marshal's throat with a scalpel. Loomis and Laurie flee down the hall. The shape rises to his feet and follows. Loomis shuts a heavy door. They stagger through a dark corridor. Laurie tries doorknobs. They burst through a set of double doors. Loomis checks his gun. The shape steps into the dark corridor. Closing the door behind him, he moves toward the double doors. Loomis grabs Laurie, glancing around. The shape nears. Cornered, the duo step into the major surgery room. Outside, Marion works the marshal's radio.
Unit calling, identified.
Marion Chambers with Dr. Loomis at the clinic. He's here.
10-4, unit calling, identify suspect.
Michael Myers, just get your ass over here.
Loomis peers through the door's window pane. Laurie backs into a corner. The room is fixed with a table, oxygen tanks, and surgical tools. Hugging the tiled wall, Laurie sinks to the floor. The shape barges through the double doors. Loomis runs to Laurie's side and offers another gun.
Take it! Take it!
The shape peers inside. Loomis sets the gun on the floor by Laurie. The shape bangs on the door. Loomis stands next to the door, his gun trained on the entryway. The shape breaks the window pane and busts through the wooden door. Loomis cowers away. Pulling the trigger, his eyes widen. The shape jabs Loomis in the gut. Thick blood drips off the scalpel. Loomis stumbles backwards into the table and falls. Laurie's eyes shift from Loomis to the shape. He moves slowly across the room towards her.
Michael!
He stops and lowers the scalpel. Tilting his head, he raises the scalpel and inches closer to Laurie. She picks up the gun. The shape's head jolts back. He touches his mask. Blood pours out of the eye slots. Laurie drops the gun. The shape wobbles. Loomis looks up from the floor. The shape blindly swipes the scalpel, swinging wildly around Laurie. Loomis crawls to his feet. He opens the valve on an ether tank. The shape turns his blind swinging towards Loomis. Laurie looks over her shoulder. She stands and opens the valves on two green cylinders. Michael totters back towards her.
Yeah.
Loomis tugs tubes out of their sockets. One is labeled ether, the other oxygen. The shape continues to flail wildly with the blade. Hugging the wall, Lori inches away from the cylinders. Loomis clutches Hunt's lighter.
Get out now!
Lori sprints through the hole in the door.
It is time, Michael.
Holding up the lighter, a wall of fire pushes Lori to the floor. A plume of black smoke rolls through the hallway. Marion rushes inside. Lori hides behind an overturned table. The flames lick at the double doors. The shape marches through the fire, engulfed in yellow flames. Lori's eyes widen. Fire consumes the shape's entire body. He staggers past a gurney, then falls. Lori's expression hardens. Fire laps around the shape's mask. Dawn. Smoke obscures the parking lot, which is filled with fire trucks and police cruisers. A deputy buttons up his jacket as he breezes over to Hunt, leaning against his cruiser.
What's the count?
10. So far.
Hunt rounds the back of his cruiser. Reporters surround Lori as a paramedic pushes her in a wheelchair.
You have any first-hand information about what happened inside the hospital?
Can't I ride in front?
Oh, no, sorry, I have to put you in back. You ready? Watch out your feet.
Oh, she's now being assisted out of the wheelchair.
Careful.
Into the ambulance.
Oh, she is big step. Big step. Okay. Keep the leg up, we'll have you out of here in a second.
He closes the ambulance door and hops in the passenger seat.
Okay.
The ambulance pulls off into a dense cloud of smoke and fog. In the back of the ambulance, Lori's lips curl downward. She stares off. Michael's burning body. The shape's mask melts with Michael's scorched flesh. Cut to black. Audio description created by Zoo Digital, funded by Netflix, written by Stephen Peltier, and narrated by Tansy Alexander. Cast: Laurie Strode, Jamie Lee Curtis, Sam Loomis, Donald Pleasance, Lee Brackett, Charles Cyphers, Graham, Jeffrey Kramer, Jimmy, Lance Guest, Karen, Pamela, Susan Shoup, Gary Hunt, Hunter Von Lear, The Shape, Dick Warlock, Bud, Leo Rossi, Mrs. Alves, Gloria Gifford, Jill, Tawny Moyer, Janet, Anna Alicia, Dr. Mixter, Ford Rainey, Mr. Garrett, Cliff Emick, Marion, Nancy Stevens, Marshall, John Zenda, Mrs. Elrod, Lucille Benson, Annie, Nancy Loomis, Lindsay, Kyle Richards, Tommy, Brian Andrews. Supervising sound editor, David Lewis Udall. Re-recording mixers, Bill Varney, Greg Landacre, Steve Maslow. Credits continue to scroll.
Bring us a dream, give him a pair of eyes with a come-hither gleam. Give him a lonely heart like Pagliacci, and lots of wavy hair like Liberace. Mr. Sandman, someone to hold, would be so peachy before we're too old.
Copyright 1981, Dino De Laurentiis Corporation. All rights reserved. Special thanks to Jean and Louise Bramson.